Where's the Shrek trivia?
The gingerbread man became a mascot for Walmart. Eddie Murphy has said that Shrek is his best work.
Has he really?
Yes. What? Cameron Diaz underwent kung fu fighting during the making of Charlie's Angels and became very physical when recording her kung fu moves for Fiona's fight, and at times even broke out into Cantonese.
So,
which seems fake, Cameron Diaz.
So you didn't say that she got kung fu training. You said she underwent kung fu, which is very different.
Hi, and welcome to Brought to the Table. Today, we don't have everybody. We have Carter Van Huss, Caitlin Phillips, and Scott Pruitt. This is a show for this group of friends to come together and share with each other and with you, our audience, things that we find fun, relevant, or otherwise interesting. Today, we just have Carter and Scott, and they are freestyling it. And I am attempting to moderate this experience.
I don't think much moderation needs to happen. I think we'll be rather civil.
Depends. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how much you guys fight with each other and with the audience.
Yeah, listen, audience.
I've got my boxing gloves on.
I've got my boxing shoes on.
Good. We're ready.
Carter, you box bad.
Only if you're expecting it.
So anyway, here's more Shrek trivia.
Have you ever listened to a podcast, Caitlin? Do you know what makes them enjoyable?
It's not just it's diverting not Shrek to trivia. Shrek trivia.
No.
All the podcasts I listen to have Shrek trivia.
That's fair. That is true.
All right, get started, guys. I want to hear about your glitches.
Anyways, after that lovely intro, which was probably edited out, Carter and I today are going to be talking about some old video games and some really fun glitches. And not just glitches because the games were shitty, but glitches because they cut corners to fit on really, really limiting platforms. So we're going to talk about old games because new platforms make it super easy. Not super easy, but they make it easier to do simple things. Some examples of limiting are like limited space on cartridges. If you want to ship a game in like a couple of kilobytes, you got to pack your shit together. The hardware itself, like the CPUs are really, really slow, and safety features both on the chips and in the games are not common because if you're going to do everything right, you don't need safety. This usually means carefully crafted inputs that are, you know, you might have checked for, but you're not checking for now because you don't want to waste the time or CPU cycles or space on the game cartridge. I mean, you can bump around in memory, hit edge cases, and usually cause things to break. Or, as we're going to talk about today, not just break, but break in interesting ways that let you do unintended things.
Yeah, so the first of these glitches is, I think, probably the most famous one. Either this one or the other one that I'm going to be talking about, we're going to talk about four today, I think are the most famous old video game glitches around. The one I'm going to be talking about is from the arcade cabinet Pac-Man, and specifically what happens when you reach level 256. All right, so out of this whole list, this is the simplest glitch to reproduce, although not the easiest. Getting to level 256 is a massive feat in and of itself, so you know, seeing the glitch is nigh impossible for the everyday man. When you do reach level 256, which I believe the record time to get to and beat level 256 is around 3 hours and 30 minutes for the world record. Once you do get to level 256, the right half of the entire screen of Pac-Man, which, if you can imagine a Pac-Man screen, is just a big old maze that you know is populated by dots and ghosts and your boy Pac-Man. But the right-hand side of the screen becomes a jumbled mess of sprites and map tiles and random numbers and letters and various colors. It renders the game, or rather the level, unbeatable, because not all of the dots spawn in, and you can't go and get them, and so you can't get enough dots to complete the level, and thus you can't beat it. The maximum score for Pac-Man is actually limited because of this glitch. The maximum score you can achieve by eating every ghost available and collecting every dot and every fruit available to you is 3,333,360 points. Okay? And that number is a highly sought after number. So now that I've explained the glitch to you, why don't I sort of give you a heads up as to why I wanted to talk about it. The glitch itself isn't particularly interesting. You know, Scott said, and we'll get to some cases of this further down the line, that some glitches can be really cool and you can do some really, really cool things with them. This is not one of those glitches. This one is just a glitch that breaks the game and you can't play it anymore. However, what makes it interesting is how long it went undetected, which was a fairly long time, and what it means for the game itself. Like I said, the fact that there's roughly 3.3 million points that you can achieve at all means that there's a limit to how good you can be at this game. That being said, there's not been a lot of people to achieve that number. There's been just over 20 people, according to Twin Galaxies, which is the sort of leading arcade leaderboards website, just over 20 people to actually complete this achievement out of anybody who's ever played Pac-Man ever. The current world record, like I said, is actually 3 hours and 28 minutes and 49 seconds held by David Race. But if you've heard about maybe Twin Galaxies before, or you've heard about the Pac-Man kill screen before, it's likely through the lens, or maybe, I don't know what to call it, like the channel of a man named Billy Mitchell. Billy Mitchell, until recently, was sort of the leader in Pac-Man, and he was considered to be the first person to reach a perfect score. But recently, his scores were taken under consideration for allegations of cheating, and so all of them were wiped off of the face of Twin Galaxies. That's really the only reason why I talk about this achievement, this glitch, because it really defines the highest echelon of play of this game, and also because it really represents a point in pop culture, which I think is really interesting. If you have seen Wreck-It Ralph, the very end of the movie of Wreck-It Ralph, the right-hand side of the screen glitches out and does some crazy shit, that's it. That's the Pac-Man kill screen sort of in pop culture. The Google Doodle for the 30th anniversary of Pac-Man was a playable, stylized version of the Google logo as Pac-Man. And if you reach 256 in that one too, it also bugged out, even though it wasn't really necessary to do that.
Yeah, it was like an intentional feature of their game, not like the same bug reoccurring.
Yeah, they weren't just idiots. So I'm going to try to really quickly go through why this happens. The core problem for anybody who has any sort of training in computers, that's really vague.
Any in programming, computer training.
In any computer training. Now, if you have any training in programming, the core problem of this was integer overflow, essentially. So if you do know anything about programming, you'll probably recognize that 256 is 2 to the 8th power. And that's important because the number or the place where the level counter is stored in memory in the game, like Scott said, there was a very limited amount of memory. The place where this was stored was an 8-bit integer. So there's only 256 slots. But it starts at 0. Okay. Now, I'm not going to go into the technical details of this, but essentially what happens is when you reach level 256, it wraps back around to 0 instead of counting to 256 because it doesn't actually have the space for it. And when it counts back around to 0, the way that the map is drawn relies on that number being between 1 and 255. And because of that, what it does is it tries to draw little fruits at the bottom of the screen 256 times. Now, there are only 13 slots for those fruits. Mm. So it just starts writing over the entire map until it counts down from 256 back down to 1. And so it just completely destroys the rest of the map because they didn't think they probably didn't think anybody would ever do this. They didn't check to make sure that 255 didn't wrap back over to 250 or wrap back over to 0. And so because of that, this error occurred and their logic failed on them. But like Scott said, it's all about edge cases, and normal players won't ever, ever see this.
Just too many fruits.
Mm-hmm. That's all I gotta say about that one.
And the fun part is, like, because it was, like, an unintentional, non-tested thing, it was, like, trying to look up which fruits to draw, and it was just reading random things from memory, which is why the screen is garbage and not full of fruits. Which leads me into my next bug about random things being hit in memory. It's about Super Mario World, which you can play on a number of platforms. I think you can play it on Game Boy Advance, too. Originally for SNES?
Yeah, originally for the Super Nintendo.
Super Nintendo. So, what is code injection?
That's a great way to start this. I love it.
Code injection is kind of how it sounds. It's the ability to rewrite the code that the game is playing. Or, more generally, it's the ability to put in segments of code into any running program. Since we're talking about games, the program that's running is the game. Once you have code injection, as long as you can inject enough code, like there's enough space, you can do whatever you want. So people have gotten robots that are like playing the game to rewrite code to turn the game into Pong, like a Pong simulator where the ball is Mario's face because, you know, they don't want to rewrite the sprites. Snake, Flappy Bird. Flappy Bird is actually accomplished by a human being pressing buttons on a controller, which is kind of crazy if you see when we get into it. There are probably many ways to accomplish it in Super Mario World because there are a number of glitches, but I'm just going to talk about one and kind of the general strategy. So first, to kind of visualize how code injection works, you have to kind of imagine what memory is like. Memory usually refers to lots of things. Sometimes it's the kind of in-memory state, the temporary state once you load up the game, so on and so forth. We're just going to refer to it as a general, quote, memory, and we won't go into specifics. Mm-hmm. Imagine it as a list of numbers written one per line on a page, like a piece of paper, and left-hand column's the line number, so 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then you have numbers on each line, like 10, 50, 200, so on and so forth. Most of the time, we read a set of these lines starting at a line number, like read four numbers starting at line 100, and we could call those numbers bytes, and we would call the line numbers offsets, so read four bytes starting at offset 100 would be like read the four lines at line 100, 101, 102, so on and so forth. The numbers we're reading correspond to basically everything in the game that you can think of. They're artwork for the game. So you could recommend the artwork as, like, numbers are the color intensities, so on and so forth. And that's how you could represent the pictures, sprites, so on and so forth. They could be variables for the game, like your position, what's your x-coordinate, or your number of coins, number of lives. They could be game data, like Pokemon stats or moves, or, you know, what happens when I get a mushroom in Mario. Or they could be the actual instructions, the code instructions for the game itself. Because the CPU is just reading the numbers and being like, oh, I know how to execute this instruction because I'm just a calculator. So, one example of a game variable that's stored in some form of memory is Mario's power-up state. If you ever played Super Mario World, you know you start off as small Mario. If you get a mushroom, you turn to big Mario. You can also get the feather and you turn into Cape Mario, who can fly. Or you get a fire flower and you turn into Fire Mario. For technical details, they're represented in this game with numbers. Just one small number that's either 0 for small, 1 for big, 2 for cape, or 3 for fire. In the special states, Mario has special actions, like in fire mode, you can throw fireballs, and especially when you spin jump, you can throw fireballs. And the code for these special actions is laid out sequentially in memory. So you can imagine that some line on the paper has, like, say, 50 lines in a row are, this is what Mario does when he is in power-up state 3. He has the fire cap, and he jumps. And that's just code, say. So if I jump, I look at my power-up state, I see it's 3, and I go to line, say, 503, and I read that, and I run it. Makes sense, and it's really efficient, because I can just look at the page and execute it based on this number. But what happens if the power-up state is not 3, 2, 0, or 1? What if we read power-up state 5 or power-up state 10? What is there? Well, because we want to put a lot of things on our paper, it's probably other parts of the game that have nothing to do with power-up states. So, what actually happens, and what's one of the entry points for code execution, is there's a bug that glitches your power-up state, and you can increment it as many times as you want. This is kind of a bug with, like, Yoshi glitching into stuff, and you kind of do a couple special sequences. So eventually we can get to something like power-up state 6, and we end up reading stuff from memory you weren't supposed to, and executing things you weren't supposed to. What happens when you do spin jumps? Who knows? Random shit's gonna start happening. If you ever get into a scenario where you're reading random memory, especially if it's like random code, you're probably gonna crash the game. So you kind of have to be very careful and understand what's happening. Usually people actually read the assembly code for the game and try and figure this out. But because essentially random shit is start happening, if you can control and find that random section and make it do what you want, you can essentially start overwriting memory. And careful overwrites of memory based on other variables in the game, say like one of the variables would be our x-coordinate, mean we can just overwrite various parts of that paper, including the parts of the paper that make up the code for the game. And once you do that, all bets are off. You could rewrite it so that when you jump, the game crashes, or when you jump, you go flying and there's no gravity. All bets are off, and people have taken this to the logical extreme and reprogrammed in Pong.
Wait, I'm a little curious why it would call 5 if that's not a Mario state.
Basically, the game doesn't check to see if you're in a valid power-up state. So you say, why would it do anything with 5? So you have some power-up state, and it's just some number on your paper. And there is a separate glitch that lets you accidentally increment that number, and it doesn't check if it increments it past 3.
Ah.
So now you've gotten into the state where you're in 5, 6, 10, or whatever. Now you perform an action that the game normally wants you to do, like spin jump or throw fireballs or something like that. And the game is like, oh, what do I do when a person presses this button? And it basically just says, okay, well, if I was in power up state 0, I would read at line 100. Power up state 1, I'd read at line 110, say, and then 120 and so on and so forth. So it kind of just looks up at a known location on the paper, which is based on your power up number. If your power up number is garbage, you end up reading garbage from the paper.
Yeah, that's one of those instances that Scott was talking about at the beginning of the episode, where the fact that they don't check to see if you are in a valid power-up state isn't because they just didn't think about it, or they thought, you know, maybe not worth it. They thought, well, they did think it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it to put in that memory because, well, maybe they could throw in an extra sprite, or maybe they could throw in an extra little bit to this level, or some extra functionality that would increase the game's quality more, while maybe not protecting against these edge cases that they didn't really expect people to go for.
Yeah, and if you want to talk about like modern stuff, the memory is all like virtualized. So you can imagine you have a big book where most of the pages are like on fire, blank pages. And if you try and start reading from the pages, it explodes intentionally. So you can't accidentally break things like this. So you'll get, and they're actually called memory pages, which is why I try to use that metaphor. But okay. Like modern hardware kind of tries to protect you from stupid shit like this. And so because things are like the cost of doing one check is much smaller now that hardware is much faster. And you end up doing much more stuff in like rendering 3D, whereas like checking one number is infinitely cheap.
All right, I think we're good on that one, huh?
It's a fun one. Especially, you should look up videos on the Flappy Bird Super Mario World. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, we'll try to throw some videos into our show notes. Hopefully people will enjoy that.
Yeah.
So my next topic, or my next glitch, is like the entire reason that I wanted to do this topic. So I brought this topic to Scott and was like, yo, let's fuck it up. And so far, I think we're doing pretty good. So if you ask most people, what's the spookiest location in Pokemon Red and Blue? Mm-hmm. Almost guaranteed, they'll say, well, it's Lavender Town, of course. It's where all the ghosts are. They have a tower that's just dedicated to dead Pokemon. How is that not the spookiest thing in the game? And let me tell you, the spookiest place in Pokemon Red and Blue is just off of the eastern coast of Cinnabar Island. In fact, it is the eastern coast of Cinnabar Island. And the reason for that is one terrifying Pokemon to see as a child called Missingno. Missingno.
Did you actually get scared by Missingno?
Yes, let me tell you. So Missingno is a Pokemon that is a glitch that you can encounter in the game. And when you see it, the name pops up as Missingno. The number that it has is number 0, which of course doesn't make sense. And it can have a variety of sprites when you encounter it in the wild, including ghosts, like before you're able to see the Marowak ghost at, coincidentally, Lavender Town. It can be a fossilized Aerodactyl. It can be a fossilized Kabutops. But for the majority of the time, it takes on the appearance of this really staticky, glitchy-looking, backwards L-shaped sprite that, if you don't know what you're looking at least to me, it always looked like this really terrifying totem pole. As a child, that's just sort of what it looked like to me. Now, Missing No was this sort of legend that was passed down from like older kids to younger kids as they started playing different Pokemon games or started playing Pokemon Red and Blue. And they're like, listen, I'm about to tell you something very dangerous for your Pokemon game. If you do it, you could destroy your game. But I'm going to tell you anyways, because it's super cool. And the way that you were told to encounter it was, if you are familiar with the game, there's a town called Viridian City, in which there is a town, or there's a man, who will show you how to catch a Pokemon. And all you do is you walk up to him and you talk to him, and then he goes, you go into a cutscene in which you see him catch a Pokemon. Then what you're supposed to do after you watch that is you fly to Cinnabar Island and you surf up and down the coast of the island. You can't leave the eastern coast, otherwise it doesn't work. And you'll begin encountering strange things like Pokemon from the last area that you were able to encounter wild Pokemon. You'll find Pokemon that are level 100 or over, and you'll find one of two glitch Pokemon. You'll either find one named M, which behaves very similarly to Missing No, or you'll encounter one named, well, Missing No. When you encounter Missing No and you leave, you run away, you don't catch him, you leave him be, and you open your inventory, whatever item you had in the sixth slot of your inventory, you now have 128 of that item. It could be a Master Ball, it could be rare candy, it could be any valuable item in the game, and you have 128 of it. Now, if you catch Missing No, that's dangerous. Because when you catch Missing No, at least as a child, you were told, well, your game might crash, you might lose, you know, it might destroy your cartridge, it could, you know, physically haunt your house and spawn snakes into your bed, it could do all sorts of terrifying things. In reality, catching Missing No mostly just screwed up your graphics and your sprites. It did a couple more things in Pokemon Yellow where it would spawn multiple character sprites of your personal character on the screen. And it would also destroy your Hall of Fame data if you had beaten the game and had Pokemon in the Hall of Fame. That's what Missing No is. And I really wanted to talk about this because, one, it's a very interesting glitch that requires a very specific set of rather easily executable things. It's not very precise motions like in the code injection like Scott was talking about. It's very simple, but it's very specific. And let me go through how it works, because I think it's absolutely fascinating how it works. And it really shows you like the thought that they put in, and the one thing, literally like eight tiles of land that they didn't quite program right, causes this glitch to happen. So when you talk to the old man and you have the cutscene where he teaches you how to catch Pokemon, normally, your player character would spawn in and your name would show up right there in the, like, you know, so-and-so encountered a thing, a Nidoran. Actually, it's a Weedle in the cutscene. But it's the old man this time. It's the only time that you are not the first-person character in the battle cutscene. So what they do is they have to replace your name with the old man's name, and they have to put your name somewhere else. So what they do is they place it in the same memory where the next wild Pokemon you would encounter would be stored. Now, this isn't a problem because you are in Viridian City and you can't spawn wild Pokemon in Viridian City. And when you walk into a place where you can spawn wild Pokemon, then that space will get overwritten and then your name will already have been put back where it needs to be. Now, here's where it gets fun. As soon as you finish talking to him, you don't walk anywhere, you don't go into any wild grass or anything, you fly to Cinnabar Island. And you walk to the eastern side of Cinnabar Island, and you float up and down the coast where the water meets the land, and you can't stray one tile to the east. If you do, this doesn't work. Because on this very particular spot of land, for some reason, they programmed it to be able to spawn wild Pokemon, but it does not define what Pokemon spawn there. it doesn't refill the slot that your name is taking place. And so the slot that it's trying to pull that data from has what amounts to garbage data in it. And so it starts pulling random Pokemon and it starts pulling random things. Earlier, I had said that integers or the integer for the Pac-Man level counter was 8 bits. It was 256, 0 to 255. There are 256 slots for Pokemon to be stored in, like Pokemon numbers, but only 151 Pokemon exist in the first game.
If only they knew.
If only they knew
what was coming.
How many we would have. But essentially what happens is random numbers in this 256 slots start getting pulled, and sometimes it matches to one of the 151 Pokemon. Aside from you, I think you can spawn most Pokemon into this glitch. But then it'll start pulling from other ones as well. And when it starts pulling from those other random data slots, that's when you encounter missing, though. It's just the fact that your name was had to be put somewhere else in order for this one simple cutscene to take place. And because these 8 tiles of land were programmed slightly incorrectly, this glitch, which was terrifying as a child, but also like amazing, was able to happen. Any questions about missing, though, or its cultural relevance, or how it happens?
Can you catch a Mew this way?
I don't believe you can. I was reading into it yesterday. I didn't look too deep into it, but I'm pretty sure that is essentially the only Pokemon that won't spawn in this glitch.
Because you can't, like, it's based on the characters in your name, right? And I wonder if like you can't get the right character to get Mew's number. Like, it's not a valid
value. Because it's based on the characters in your name, I know that not every Pokemon will spawn, and in fact the characters in your name will determine what missing no looks like. I think it's the 7th character in your name has to be a specific set of characters, and it'll spawn as a different version than the totem pole L that I was describing. Like, it'll spawn as the ghost or fossil Aerodactyl, or ghost sprite. So
we need a separate bug that lets us override our name to arbitrary things that aren't just letters. Then we can catch Mew.
There you go. Perfect.
Anyways, I, being a fan of Mario games, am going to talk about another bug in a different Mario game. So, we're going to talk now about a much more advanced game, because it's actually 3D. It's Super Mario 64, and I don't know if you've heard about it, but we're going to be talking about Parallel Universes. I'm going to apologize in advance, because the video that I learned this from is actually much better at explaining it, but it is 25 minutes long. And if you are a nerd and you like video games, especially Super Mario 64 and speedrun type things, you should go Google Super Mario 64 Parallel Universes and just cut off this podcast.
No, don't.
But come back later.
Yeah, come back later, I guess. This is the first glitch we're talking about that is not related to messing with or reading arbitrary memory, but it is related to an optimization, or could be perceived as such, at least. The end goal is that you get to glitch around parts of a level, and you can act like you're on the floor, but some objects don't appear, like walls, and the means of getting there also mean you can kind of teleport between places. The use I've seen of it is for a speedrun-like activity, except it's not really speedrun, it's actually trying to complete Super Mario 64 with the minimum number of A presses, which is very hard to do considering A is the jump button. So, how does it start? The game has to do floor detection. So, you have Mario, he's at some space in 3D. How do you know if you're standing on a floor? It's kind of important, because otherwise you'd be jumping or falling. So to do floor detection, you can imagine Mario in 3D projected onto the 2D map. He has some X and Y coordinates, and then you have floor locations that are kind of the Z that goes up and down. When you're walking around in the game, your X and Y coordinates are floating point numbers, which for non-computer programmers mean they're decimal values with some fixed digits of precision. So you could have things like 3.0004, 59.2, so on and so forth. Floor detection, though, uses the computer term a short, which is a 2-byte integer. And like we were saying earlier, if you only use a fixed amount of memory to represent your things, you can only represent a fixed amount of space. Shorts, being 2 bytes, can only hold roughly negative 30,000 to positive 30,000, and they can only hold those integers. Which means if we have a number like 5.7, it's going to get mapped onto the short value 5. Or it could be mapped onto 6, depending on your rounding strategy. That's not super important for this one. The thing is, how do you map the value like 65,000.5 to a number between negative 30,000 and 30,000? The answer is not the game crashes. It actually wraps it around. More fun wraparound. So you could think the number 65,542.3 wraps around into short range into 6.3, and then we round it down to 6. So the question then becomes, if we're using these shorts just for floor detection, but we keep our X and Y as these big floating point numbers, what happens if the game thinks you're at X coordinate 65,542.3? The game acts like you're at the coordinate 6, 5 for floor detection and you walk around as normal, but basically nothing else is there. And in fact, if you don't use the like fix camera in place button, the console crashes the game because it doesn't know what to render. So you're walking around on the floor, but objects like walls don't exist. So you can do interesting stuff, like walk through walls. And we call this, or not necessarily we, whoever came up with this calls it a parallel universe, because some parts are like the original universe. Mostly the floors, because only floor detection has this kind of optimization slash limitation. And now you're asking, how the hell do you do this if you have to go to X coordinate 65,000, or as you'll see, higher? The answer, like a lot of these things, is two glitches working together. There's a separate glitch where if you're walking on a slanted wall that is half submerged in water, there is no cap on your speed except that you start falling into water normally. But if you start walking on this sloped hill that is halfway submerged into water with your back up against a wall, you basically just keep gaining speed and it doesn't ever cap your speed. So you can get infinite speed, and eventually you'll get enough speed to move about 65,000 times 4 units in one frame. So when it's trying to do collision detection, you actually move so far that you're past all of the walls that you could possibly think of, and you'll teleport to the parallel universe. You can also maintain the speed to keep teleporting to unintended locations. Like, you could imagine if you're just short of this, you know, kind of teleporting into the parallel universe, you would move into the parallel universe, but slightly too short, so you kind of move relative to where you were. What this means is we can exploit both the fact that we're now moving with essentially infinite speed, and the fact that some parts of the game don't work as normal, to get to places that we normally wouldn't in levels. And if you look at the parallel universe's kind of implementation, we can use this to get a star without jumping up to a platform that we usually need to jump to.
All right.
Sounds good to me. I'm pretty bad at jumping.
My knees hurt. I'm sure Mario's do too. I don't know why he thinks running this fast is more appropriate, but you know, whatever. So I have a question for you. So you were talking about the collision detection. Does the collision detection also function in that way where you can glitch through the collision detection for floors as well? So say you are walking against a slanted floor or a slanted wall. Is it possible for you to just goof up really bad and use this, you know, what amounts to teleporting to travel into a parallel universe under the floor? And what happens if you do that? Do you know?
I don't think so. I also don't know if there are any glitches that let you get... Basically, I think speed is measured as speed and not as a vector.
Okay.
And so there's not like a concept of like building up infinite speed in the Z direction to go through floors. I'm not sure. There might be a separate glitch. But as far as I know, there's no usages, because if there was a separate glitch, it would be much easier to use it to just go up and get the star. You wouldn't need to build literally like hundreds of thousands or millions of speed units to glitch around parallel universes when you really need to go up like 10 units.
Yeah. I think more what I was thinking was, you know, like if you adjust your position in the parallel universe just slightly and you adjust it in the same Z plane, you know, like you said, there's no Z component to the speed. You adjust it just slightly so that you are under, like, you know, say you're standing next to an elevated platform, and then you move in the parallel universe such that you're under the elevated platform. I think that was more what I was going. Would that put you under it, or would that just place you on top of it?
The way this normally works is you kind of have to walk up ramps as normal, and that actually has some interesting implications for how fast you have to be going, because they use... Not even completely physically correct, but like ramps make you move slower like you would in the real world, except they don't take into account which axis you're moving on. It's just if you're on a ramp, you move slower. Mm-hmm. So there isn't a way to basically shift your momentum into the Z direction. You can only shift yourself onto a ramp and start walking up that ramp really quickly.
Gotcha. All right, cool.
The other part is, because the other interesting part is, because nothing really exists in the parallel universe, because most of the other detection, basically only floor detection, happens in this weird kind of roundabout way. If you want to actually use this glitch to gain a star, you have to not only go to the parallel universe, do your stuff, you have to get back.
How do you get back?
You have to maintain your speed.
What?
Yeah, basically, you have to maintain your speed most of the time, so you basically use it, do your unintended location things, maintain enough speed that you go backwards to where, kind of where you were, into the original universe, but into a different X and Y and potentially Z location.
So this sounds like a lot of frame-perfect bullshit. Is this actually human achievable, or is this something that you have to...
As far as I know, it's not
human achievable. Okay, there we go.
Like, you can do some of this shit intentionally. Like, you can find basically a wall and, like, shoot yourself. But, like, to get the final outcome, I think it is pretty much impossible to do it by yourself.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
It's even harder because, like I said, unless you lock your camera into the original universe, in which you can't see anything anymore, the game crashes on console.
Yeah, that would make it hard to not see what Mario's doing, what he's plumbing up.
I hate it when I can't see that boy.
So do I. You got anything else?
No. Like I said, I don't want to do this injustice. It's a really cool glitch, but it is quite complicated. So,
yeah.
Fun to talk about. Watch the video if you're more interested.
Yep. We'll be sure to include resources for all of these glitches and, you know, whatever we're talking about.
And if you have any fun game glitches that you'd like us to think about, talk about, complain about, send them in.
I have one. It's called PUBG. Just all of it.
That game is a glitch.
That game is a glitch.
Both like a software glitch and like a market glitch. Who would pay for it?
We did.
Yeah, you guys.
We're fools. Caitlin, take us.
It's a fun game until you play.
Caitlin, I have the need one. To say Hawaiian pizza. Take us out.
I'm the only one who's not a fool. Is the important thing.
That's not true.
Excuse you. No, that was really cool. Thank you for telling us all about these glitches, guys. Let's head out. You can find us on Facebook, Tumblr, at Brought to the Table, and at Twitter, at To the Table Pod. Please feel free to submit your own things, your own game glitches, your own favorite types of cheese, your own favorite candles, whatever, at broughttothetable@gmail.com. Please leave a rating and review on your respective pod app, and make sure to subscribe so that you never miss us, because we'll miss you. Thanks for coming to our table. Bye.
Hold up real quick. Happy 20th episode, guys. This is our 20th episode.
Oh, dunk.
Yeah.
Hey, does that include all the ones we deleted that people don't know about?
No, it doesn't include those two.
All right.
Only been two.
That you know of.
What? I've edited most of them.
That you know of.
We all got to get the recorded one without you.
And didn't release it. We're just like, fuck yeah. Carter. Good. Do it more often. All right. Hawaiian pizza.
Bye.
Hawaiian pizza.
Kevin!
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 Oh, yeah. Let us know if you find Kevin.
Yeah, he's been gone a while. Like, honestly, we might have, he might be lost. I don't know.